Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie, as always, here with John. How are you?
Dude, I'm doing great. It's been awesome. A great day.
Yeah, awesome to hear, buddy.
Productive and also relaxing.
Okay. Those are the best. That's like peak combo right there.
I think. Yeah. Like they intertwined in such an amazing way. I just feel great. How are you doing?
I'm good. Today was good for me as well. I think that means tomorrow is going to suck.
Okay. Well,
I mean, Mr. law Damon of averages over here. You know, law of averages.
You know what doesn't suck?
I don't.
We got Dylan, who came in over on Patreon, and he joined us at the $4.50 a month, which
is
I didn't know
Australian?
What that meant. So,
is it in pretend money?
Dylan, if we owe you something, we will be on top of that. So, but I do want to say thank you so much for joining us. And I think we also said Amanda joined us last week at the $3 a month level. But just in case, I want to give Amanda a shout out as well.
Yep. We really appreciate you guys supporting us. Also appreciate all the 5-star reviews coming in. This is from Katie Houston. It says, I really enjoy these guys. I love how they communicate the story and with each other. Thank you, Katie. This is from the NASCAR fan, D.E. NASCAR fan.
I did not write this one.
I first heard John and Jamie on Chris Jericho's podcast and thought they were so well-spoken. I now go to their page first whenever I'm in the mood to listen to podcasts. I have yet to find an episode I don't really enjoy. Great job, guys. Look forward to listening more. Good news for you, the NASCAR fan. This Friday, we will be on Talk is Jericho, breaking down D.B. Cooper.
Dude, yeah. Thank you so much, the NASCAR. And I would love to just chat with you about NASCAR. There's not very many NASCAR fans left, and I would like to talk to somebody.
There has to be,
you know, I bet I could look up some crimes in NASCAR because it was originated from moonshining.
Bootlegging
some moonshine.
It's the origin. Today's is not as fun as moonshine, and I knew this case came to us from somewhere. I knew it was recommended. Did you track down where it came from? Because I did.
Well, then why don't you just tell me?
Yeah. I looked on Patreon because we get a lot from there. I looked in our reviews. I looked in our email. I looked in our social media messages. This actually came from Mackenzie's husband. Oh. Mackenzie, our lead writer, her husband recommended this case. And honestly, aside from one small piece of it, I'd never heard this name before. So,
yes, that's the exact same with me. I did not know this case existed. In fact, I tried to find something to like listen to on a drive home one day about this case just to kind of start my research. Only one podcast that I found.
Yep.
So we are going to at least be the second.
We're always number two. I've always said that.
Number two is first loser. Jamie, let's get into it.
Yeah, why don't you get us rolling, buddy?
Clay Tiffany was a staple in Briarcliff Manor in Westchester County, New York. As a teenager in the 1960s, Clay was an exceptional athlete who went for long swims in the Hudson River. I feel like that is the most New York thing you could say. Yeah. I went for swims in the Hudson River.
Right.
He was also an avid jogger and a star basketball player at Briarcliff High School. In fact, a trophy display case at the school had a plaque listing all the school's 1,000-point scores, and Clay's name was on that. So that's incredible. That's like a pretty cool milestone to hit in basketball.
Absolutely.
Clay was funny. He was lighthearted, according to friends. He was very smart. He majored in English at Colgate University. One of his friends from high school would go on record to say that he was opinionated and somewhat wild, but lots of fun to have talks about big issues with, and he was a good friend, end quote. Clay went on to become a school teacher and coached the girls' track and field team, but people started to notice some things were changing. One of his former schoolmates would go on the record and say, quote, I did not notice that some kind of change came over him until the early 1990s. He seemed to have become agitated and almost glowed with indignation over problems involving race, politics. Gosh, you name it. I tried to recall the guy I knew, but it became difficult. end quote. So this friend is saying something changed. He became this happy guy that then all of a sudden something triggered him to become angry and got really involved into race, politics, and all kinds of stuff that just made him angry. Many of his friends wondered if he was suffering from some kind of an acute mental illness that turned him into a very polarizing figure.
Yeah, it is a sharp change, and we may not know the exact reason that that happened, but it is very important.
I'm already kind of an angry guy, so if you notice me getting more angry, please say something.
Okay. Thanks. Well, I got something to tell you.
I didn't ask you. I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, it's it is interesting because of the big change, and I think people change over time, but it's not often that drastic in that short of amount of time. And usually, you don't get angry and then get political. It usually goes the other way, from my experience on social media, at least. In the late 90s, somebody thought it was a good idea to give Clay a public access cable TV show. He called it Dirge for the Charlatans.
Talk to me like I'm five and tell me what dirge means. Is that like spilling the tea?
Dirge is like a lamentation, like a lament, like you're essentially complaining. So complaining, and charlatan is basically a fraud.
Okay.
So complaining about all the elite fraudulent people in society, which is politics. On his show, he was somebody who attacked local officials, the police, village officials, landlords. He went at them for the things that he perceived as injustice or ill will in the community toward people.
And this is on a TV show. This is before the internet. So I would like compare this to a bad Facebook group who just gripes about everything.
Yeah, I think public access, think of this as like a live morning radio show with video attached that you could watch on TV.
Yeah.
His appearance also made for an interesting show. He was tall, he had a thick afro of curly red hair, and some people who criticized him would say that he resembled Bozo in very negative ways.
Dude, I hope that most of you all know the Bozo reference, but that's amazing.
Yeah, I don't want to degrade Bozo as
well. I always wanted to throw the ball in the bucket.
Yeah, I practiced.
The grand prize game.
Clay would track down the targets of his anger, people in the community that he thought were negatively impacting individuals. He would track them down with tape recorders, and he would try to get them to say something that he could use on his show to show what he thought was true about their personality. So if he thought they were hateful,
he wasn't interviewing them. He was like baiting them into saying something to a hidden recorder.
It was absolutely rage baiting. And a lot of people saw him as an activist. He was out there trying to solve injustice. And you know, I think this with cell phones, people are doing this all the time now. So if anything, he was ahead of his time. Fox News correspondent Janine Pirro was the Westchester district attorney, and she was one of Clay's targets. The first time was in 99 when Pirro was given a talk the night before her husband was arraigned on federal tax evasion and conspiracy charges. At the end of her talk, Clay shouted out loud, "How's your husband?" 4 years later, he was on a group of protesters at one of her book signings. He was mad at her for not prosecuting a Briarcliff police officer that he thought was corrupt. And we'll get back to that guy pretty soon because he may not have been wrong. But he yelled, "What's the matter, Janine? Did you have a bad facelift?" And Clay was kicked out of the store where the book signing was happening. And obviously, again, he's baiting her. It seems to me, if just on the surface, that he had good intentions to fight injustice, but his actual plan was very extreme and off-putting.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm not going to get political, but like when political matters turn personal like that, it's a really big turnoff for me. So I can agree with your, you know, like the things that you believe in, the things you're trying to do politically. But then when you make it personal and take shots at people like that, it's just like, man, just do what you need to do, but yep, don't do this, you know?
Yes. And if I can disagree with you, if you treat people with respect, we're cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've talked to many people that I disagree with, but it's a civil conversation.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Yeah. Well,
Just awkward. Kidding. Go ahead.
So Clay never lost his love for swimming, and he continued those morning swims in the Hudson River, and that is where he had a confrontation with a police officer, Nick Tartaglione. I'm going to call him Nick from here on out.
That's best practice, fair I think.
Enough. All right. So this was not their first encounter, though. Allegedly, the two first met in 1997 when Tartaglione pulled Clay over. So Clay didn't recognize him at first because Tartaglione was new to the department. So the story goes that Tartaglione approached Clay's car and used an Italian slang for black people to say he heard Clay liked them. Remember, this is in the 1990s. I'm not saying that this is ever okay, but I feel like this was a more common thing to say back then.
Right.
Albeit awful.
Yes.
So then he told Clay that he was connected to the mob and could have him taken care of anytime he wanted. So Clay felt threatened. So he got out of the car and said he was going to flag down the next car and give the driver the name of a friend to call. So let's just kind of back up here. So he's pulled over by Nick, and Clay says he does not feel safe. So he's going to get out of the car and flag down a driver to give a phone number to.
Yes.
I can't imagine that would go well.
Right.
Because you're pulled over by an officer. So if you get out of your car, that's going to send so many red flags up.
Right.
But at the same time, you deserve to be pulled over for whatever reason and feel safe. And this was it seems very contentious right off
the bat. And it seems very, I can't even picture how this played out. What was Tartaglione doing when Clay got out of the car? Did he pull his weapon at that point? Did he get mad? Did he do whatever? It's hard for me to imagine how this worked out in reality. You don't want to skip over the fact that you said you were going to say Nick, and you've been nailing Tartaglione. Just props to you, my friend.
I also want to say, this is a story. We don't know for sure what Tartaglione said or didn't say. We don't have
the dash cam. Body cam.
Yeah, so it was before all that. So this is a very much he said versus he said, So, when Clay flagged down the next car, he started talking to the driver. Tartaglione grabbed Clay, slammed him into the police car, and handcuffed him, as would probably happen to me if I did the same thing.
The most surprising part to me is that he flagged a car down before this happened. I would think this would come as soon as you get out of the car.
Yeah.
So that's what I would expect.
I'm not saying that everything Tartaglione did was okay. If he actually said those things, not cool. But I don't think this response from Clay was the right one either. Man, this is a really interesting situation. Let's just keep going.
And again, he 1997 didn't have a cell phone, couldn't have done it on his own. So this wasn't a situation where he chose the aggressive route to deal with this. He wanted to try to contact somebody for help. So that's hard for us to imagine today. So it's a very tricky situation. So we have this guy, we have Clay, who has a public access show where he attacks local officials in defense of what he perceives as injustice. And we have an officer who has directly offended Clay with his language, handcuffed him, thrown him up against the car. You can't imagine this is an oil and water situation, right? He used most of his show from this point to accuse Tartaglione of being a rogue cop. He slung accusations of corruption, civil rights violations, violence, and intimidation, just like he had threatened Clay with. I am in the mafia. I have connections, and I can have you killed. That's the kind of thing that Clay was on his show saying about Tartaglione almost daily.
I would, I'm not trying to say I disbelieve Clay, but I would love to know if this was actually said.
Right.
I would love to have it on a recording of some kind.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. It's all tough to tell, all word of mouth. And then we lead up to this next confrontation at the Hudson River in 1999. Tartaglione was fed up with hearing his name called out on Clay's show. So according to reports, he showed up, he maced Clay. So is there a difference between mace and pepper spray? If we ever talked about that, I don't think it matters.
I don't know.
He maced him. He punched and kicked him, and he yelled, "You can't tell lies about me on your television show." So, obviously threatening while abusing, he broke Clay's orbital bone, which is the bone around your eye, very painful and hard to recover from, as well as several ribs. So, as you can expect, Clay was not just going to take this and stop talking. This was not a way to get Clay to shut up, right? So, he ended up suing Tartaglione and the Briarcliff Police Department, and he won a settlement in the early 2000s for $1.1 million, which is a pretty hefty payout, I think. And not to say he didn't deserve it. He obviously got abused and severely injured by the police here. And we're going to dive a little bit deeper into Nick Tartaglione when we get back from the break. And is he really who Clay said he was?
So let's take a little closer look at Nick Tartaglione. So in February of 1993, 25-year-old Yonkers native Tartaglione was hired by the Mount Vernon Police Department. And we live so close to a Mount Vernon. It's so hard to get that image out of my head. I'm sure it couldn't be more polar different or opposite than Yonkers, New York.
I don't think he'd fit into the Rock Castle County demographic.
The mayor at that time was really concerned about the high turnover the city had been facing. So when Tartaglione and five others were sworn in, the mayor asked them not to use the department as a stepping stone for better jobs. But Tartaglione transferred out a year later to join the Yonkers Police Department. He didn't stick around long in Yonkers either. So in September 1994, he joined the Pauling Police Department. But by April of 1996, he had resigned, and a month later, he was hired by the Briarcliff Manor Police Department.
So, 1993, he joins Mount Vernon, and then he goes to Yonkers, and then he goes to Pauling, and within 3 years of becoming a police officer, he's in his fourth police department in Briarcliff.
It's interesting to me that he resigned and then wasn't hired by anyone until a month later. I'm going to step out and say, like, that's kind of abnormal. So was this a situation where he was like, you need to resign or we're going to fire you? And then it took him another month to find a job. It's just kind of an interesting, like, most people don't resign and then find a job afterwards a month later. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's certainly interesting. And we don't have that paper trail, unfortunately. But we do know that this is all messy. He's not found a happy place to work, or he's not liked where he works and he moves on. Either way, he's not sticking around. In 2001, he was fired from Briarcliff Manor after being charged with perjury and official misconduct. Again, this was after he had beaten up Clay Tiffany and the village had been sued and all those things. He was asked to testify here, though, at a DMV hearing regarding a drunk driving arrest that he had made. Now, he was acquitted, but the police department still let him go. So they fired him, saying that he had messed up in this drunk driving arrest, and he was charged, but he was found not guilty, which you can't retry him for that. But at this point, his reputation's ruined, and everybody in the police department thinks he's shady, so they did let him go. He would sue the village 4 years later in 2005, to get his job back with $320,000 in back pay. Doing a really quick math in my head, do you believe that people in the Briarcliff Manor Village Police Department made $80,000 a year in 2001? Maybe they did. I don't know.
It seems like a lot. It seems like a lot.
He said that authorities made up this perjury charge as a way to get him out of the police force. They just didn't like the way he did things, and they were using this to try to fire him and to, I don't know, find a way to fire him with cause so there would be no kind of retaliation. Ultimately, he retired on disability based on a work injury in 2008 with an annual pension. So less than a decade after this incident with Clay, he's at home in 2008 collecting his pension. This is not the last time that the police force in Briarcliff would hear from him. 2 years later, Tartaglione requested a re-examination. The Comptroller's Medical Board made a very rare move and said that Tartaglione was well enough to go back to work, that his disability, for whatever reason, whether it had improved or was misdiagnosed earlier, was no longer an issue. So he was immediately placed on the top of the eligibility list for rehiring by the Briarcliff Manor Police Department. In response, the police department didn't hire anybody for 4 years until his eligibility expired. What a move.
You know that you're dealing with just a pain in the butt. If you're willing to just, everybody is going to work as hard as we can. I'm sure it was miserable, but not as miserable in their eyes as having him back in the department.
Right. And I mean, you got to think they're begging people not to move, not to retire. They're giving bonuses and that kind of thing to keep people around because they can't just not have officers. So when this happened, his eligibility was over. He wasn't retired, but due to some loopholes and the way things worked out, he was put back on disability. The village manager said there was never any question, any self-doubt, that the village did the right thing in closing the issue and detaching Mr. Tartaglione.
While all these scandals were happening, Clay was reporting them all relentlessly. He never tired of airing his grievances on his show, especially when it came to Tartaglione. On the night of March 26, 2015, police were called to Clay's house after someone asked for a welfare check. Clay Tiffany was found in his home deceased. It appeared that he had died alone, and rumors around town were that he may have been dead for about a week or two. The Westchester County Medical Examiner said that he died of natural causes, and he was 69 years old.
Obviously, he's a very controversial figure. At this point in 2015, I mean, it's a different world from when he started his show in the late 90s. There's the internet now. They're streaming, and on the police post about his death, you can see he was a divisive figure. A lot of the comments are not positive or grieving at the loss of Clay Tiffany. But again, he's 69 years old. He has passed away. Officials say it's natural causes, but of course it doesn't stop there. Let's jump back over to Nick Tartaglione, who we know had a very contentious relationship, maybe the nicest and maybe even an inaccurate way to say his relationship with Clay. They really didn't like each other. On April 11th, 2016, four men in nearby Chester, New York, disappeared from a bar owned by Tartaglione's brother. Then, in December of that year, 2016, the bodies of Martin Luna, Urbano Santiago, Miguel Luna, and Hector Gutierrez were found in a shallow grave on a farm that was owned by Nick Tartaglione. These bodies indicated that they were gangland-style killings, with one man strangled to death, the other three shot in the back of the head, execution style. And again, these were the four men that went missing from his brother's bar, were dug up on his property. 49-year-old Tartaglione was arrested and charged with four counts of murder and one count of conspiracy to distribute cocaine, which is obviously not good, but kind of an afterthought with the murders. He pleaded not guilty in his arraignment. The U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York said, "While all murders tear at the fabric of our communities, when the alleged perpetrator of a gangland-style quadruple homicide is a former police officer, that strikes at the heart of civilized society." And we'll get to his trial in a minute, but we need to make a bit of a pit stop here. In July of 2019, he's still waiting on the murder trial to happen, and he was sharing a jail cell in Manhattan with Jeffrey Epstein.
Holy crap.
Which is the one colonel I did know about this case just from seeing the name before. That's all I knew. He was a cellmate with Jeffrey Epstein in 2019. During that time, Epstein allegedly told his lawyers that a hulking ex-cop inflicted injuries that left him nearly unconscious in his cell on July 23rd of 2019. Epstein would be treated for neck injuries the following day, which we know ultimately he died of neck injuries or a hanging or a suicide or a homicide, or depending on how you believe, it was certainly questionable circumstances.
I saw a TikTok this morning where they had pictures of his like medical examination, and a lady who says that she is a medical examiner herself said, no, look at him. He's still alive. So her opinion was Epstein is still alive somewhere.
Okay. All right.
So that just goes to show you there's a wide spectrum of beliefs on what happened to Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, so many. But what we do know is that he shared a cell with Nick Tartaglione while he was waiting trial for murder.
I wonder, I mean, like, was this guy in the cell with him when he reportedly hung himself? I always thought he was in a room or a cell by himself at that point.
When he allegedly died, he was in his own cell. So he didn't have a cellmate at that time.
So after,
at least
allegedly, he got beat up by this guy, they're no longer cellies.
Right. Okay. Yes. No longer friends.
So when Tartaglione finally got his trial, the prosecution laid out their timeline of events. So those four men that were found on his property were last seen in a 2010 Chevy Equinox that was parked in the Chester Diner parking lot between 2:30 p.m. and 3 o'clock p.m. on April 11th, 2016. Martin Luna spoke with a relative on the phone at about 5 o'clock p.m. that day, but that was the last time anyone had ever heard from he or any of the other men. Prosecutors said Tartaglione got Martin to go to the bar, run by his brother as a trap. So he wanted him to be at that particular bar. Martin allegedly owed Tartaglione money as a part of a cocaine-like distribution ring. Unfortunately, Martin went to the bar and brought his two nephews and a family friend with him. So at the bar, Tartaglione tortured Martin, then forced one of his nephews to watch as he strangled Martin to death with a zip tie. Then Tartaglione drove Martin's body 30 minutes to his farm, and Tartaglione's accomplices drove the other three men to the same place. When they arrived, they took Martin's body and the other three men to a remote spot in the woods on the property, forced them to get on their knees, and then shot each of them in the back of the head. And then all of the victims were buried in a mass grave. Again, that is kind of the timeline of events that was brought up from the prosecution in Tartaglione's trial.
Yeah, his defense argued that he had nothing to do with any of this, that he was being used by the government as a fall guy. They needed to close this case, and he was somebody with a bad reputation, so they pinned it on him. But in 2023, he was found guilty and given four life sentences for the murders of Martin Luna, Urbano Santiago, Miguel Luna, and Hector Gutierrez. During sentencing, the judge agreed with family members that called Tartaglione a monster. He said, yes, you are a monster, and noted that at no point did he show any remorse for any of this. U.S. Attorney Damian Williams said, Nicholas Tartaglione brutally and senselessly murdered Martin Luna over money and then ruthlessly executed Urbano Santiago, Miguel Luna, and Hector Gutierrez simply because they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. He tried to cover up his crimes by burying all four victims in a shallow grave on his property. Today's sentence of four consecutive life terms justly reflects the pain and suffering each victim underwent at Tartaglione's hands. I hope that this outcome brings some measure of closure to the victims' families and to their community. I think the attorney summed the entire piece up pretty clearly there.
Today, Tartaglione still denies that he had anything to do with those brutal murders, and he's always trying to find ways to be released. I mean, most recently, I think he's trying to find friends with political ties to the current administration to try to find if there's any chance that he could get a pardon. I think most of the time, and I could be wrong, but like, I don't think most presidents just pardon people in the middle of their sentences. Usually they wait till the end, but you know, the current president definitely is not going to be up for re-election. So maybe he will find a way to pardon this guy.
Well, I think Tartaglione's hoping he will.
Yeah. I certainly hope that no one who is actually guilty of such a heinous crime would ever be pardoned, regardless of what political figure is in office to pardon them. But I do want to get back to Clay Tiffany. I mean, it seems like the medical examiner, this was open shut. He died of natural causes. But do you feel like I don't think Tartaglione was in any way affiliated directly with his death, but I mean, is there room for conspiracy on that? What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's always room for conversation about such a conspiracy, if that's a, seems like a weird way for me to approach that. But I think the questions are out there because obviously he has shown the ability or propensity to commit murder. He has been found guilty of such and for all intents and purposes is a murderer. And we see these people died because they owed him money. He buried him in the in his land. First of all, what happened to the mafia ties he was touting earlier? He's not going to bury them on his land if he has mafia ties.
No, he would go bury them wherever Jimmy Hoffa's buried at.
Correct. But we know that Clay Tiffany, at least in public record, is his biggest nemesis, if you will, the person that he went back and forth with the most, the person that helped to bring his reputation as a police officer down, even though Tartaglione did all of the things to bring his own reputation down, but Clay was the mouthpiece for that. So I don't think it's wrong to consider that he may have been involved. I mean, he's a police officer. He knows how to make this happen. Potentially, he still had connections locally to law enforcement. We don't have a report of the natural causes because this was not ruled an accidental death. This was not ruled a suicide or a homicide. There's no crime attached, so nobody has access to these medical records. So unless they determine or label this as undetermined, unknown, or something like that, we're never going to get to see these records, which is probably the right thing to do unless law enforcement determines, you know what, we need to go back and look. We need to see if there's any actual truth to the possibility that he could have been involved, that Tartaglione could have been involved in Tiffany's death. But without actual evidence, I'm never going to say yes, he was involved, because I mean, that's because I have no truth to back that up. But do I think it's impossible? Not at all.
Yeah, even if it wasn't like directly related in the form of, you know, doing something nefarious, Clay seemed like the kind of person that got super worked up about things. And you know what? Rightly so, apparently, because everything that Tartaglione was accused of by Clay makes me wonder if Tartaglione actually did those things, because we know he's capable of much, much worse than what Clay had originally said. But I wonder if just Clay's heart just couldn't take the constant stress.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, allegedly he was attacked by Tartaglione. I mean, well, not allegedly, he settled a $1.1 million lawsuit for being attacked by this guy. So yeah, I mean, I think anytime your mission is to expose corruption, one, that's stressful because you're always probably having to watch over your back because of the people that you're accusing. So, you know, whether it was directly related or not, I would say that it did play some kind of toll on his health because it's stressful to do those things and to go through what Clay had to go through physically with the altercation.
I will say this. I don't think the city would have, or the village, if you will, Briarcliff Manor would have covered this up for Tartaglione. It seemed like they didn't have the best relationship with him either. So I don't think this is a situation where they came in and said, yeah, we got to make sure that this doesn't look like a political murder, unless there's some world where they just didn't want that to fall back on them again, since he had already sued them. So I don't think they would protect Tartaglione is what I'm saying. So
I find it so crazy, man, that like as a state worker and supervisor, like hiring people is what I do. And I do that to alleviate the burden from other staff. So for all of the staff and the chief to say, you know what, we're just not going to hire anybody, so we don't have to hire this guy back. I think that goes to say a lot, you
it's
know,
wild. So perhaps there's a scenario where they just didn't dig deeper into it, and maybe that needs to happen. But until I see more evidence, I'm not going to even, I don't know, go down that road of, yes, he did it. Could he have? It's certainly possible. He certainly has a propensity to kill, and he seemed to hate Clay Tiffany. So if his death got more attention, I would not be upset about it. But at this point, I don't know that that needs to happen just yet.
Absolutely. Guys, this was an interesting case. So thank you to our writer, the boyfriend, Mackenzie. And
I think they're married.
They're married.
They're married.
Why did I say
they had a wedding?
Yeah. Anyway, man, it's been a long day, and maybe all my chores have finally caught up to me.
Dude, I will say this. You have said Tartaglione so many times, and you have said it beautifully. So huge props to you.
Like a boss.
If anybody has ever given us a negative review due to us mispronouncing things, I think you need to correct it today. I think this is where it needs to go.
Thank God he is not from the state in which Boston is.
Yeah, that's been an ongoing issue as of late of people. They just don't get it, man. They don't get the struggle.
It's real.
Of having to say American states into a microphone.
Yeah.
It's a real deal, Holyfield. You know what I mean?
Joe, this one's for you. Guys, we love you. We appreciate you. If you've listened to everything that we have and you want just a little bit more, don't forget, you can check out Patreon. You have bonus episodes over there for the last 7 or so years, and they're all instantly available as soon as you sign up for your first month.
Yeah, we really appreciate everything you do. Leave us some reviews. Great place to leave episode recommendations and any kind of feedback. Feel free to contact us on social media or via email at truecrimecast@gmail.com. We look forward to seeing you all next time. We also look forward to you checking out Talk is Jericho on Friday as we go deeper than ever into DB Cooper and talk about the recent updates in the last couple of years of claims people are making saying they know who DB Cooper is. So you're going to find all that out. Talk is Jericho on Friday.
Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.